guy in the world. I'm John Batchelor. The freedom of the seas, the United States Navy, they're synonymous, certainly since the end of the Second War. However, I welcome Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired aviator, senior fellow at the Sagamore Institute, writing most recently at the Wall Street Journal about the freedom of the seas. And we go to an incident that is all over the news these last hours. That is that the Red Sea is closed to many of the largest container ship firms. They're routing around the Cape of Good Hope, lengthening the voyage, costing everybody on board money, costing insurance for the shippers. And the Red Sea itself now is no longer free. The U.S. Navy has provided security. USS Kearney, for example, brought down some drones and missiles that were thrown at commercial ships some weeks ago. However, the gang in Yemen, led by a man named al-Houthi, who's been on television boasting and making threats to the U.S. Navy, that gang has now qualified freedom. Jerry, a very good evening to you. The U.S. Navy does its job, and right now they're gathering its forces with our allies. Britain and France are mentioned. There'll be others to provide security in the Red Sea, but that's not the same as freedom. What does the Navy need that it does not now have, Jerry, to do the job that it is built for, to keep the seas open for commercial ventures? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. And what I would say that the Navy needs now more than anything is leadership. So the argument that I made in my opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal is effectively that the deterrent value of naval presence has been eroded, and that has been eroded essentially over the past several years, but that it's not so much about the quality of the ships involved. The USS Kearney is an Arleigh Burke-class destroyer. It is one of the finest warships in the world. The Burke-class itself is best in show when it comes to destroyers and large surface combatants in the world right now. And the Kearney, and as well as the other ships such as the USS Mason, their records thus far in protecting themselves as well as the other merchant ships in their company has been absolutely superb. It's almost 100% on knocking down, whether it's a missile, a cruise missile, or one of these drones. The issue right now is that the presence of the United States Navy, and it is a large presence. We have the Ford class and its strike group sitting in the Eastern Med. You have the Eisenhower and its strike group sitting in the Gulf of Aden right now. And we have these other various surface combatants. That ought to be enough conventional power at sea to deter someone from attacking the United States, its allies, its partners, and its interests. But in fact, we're actually seeing that they're continuing to strike. So what is missing? What is missing is essentially the sense amongst the other participants in the Middle East, specifically our adversaries there, whether it's Iran or their proxies in Yemen, is a belief that we have the strength of will that we're going to come after them and their interests at home. So this erosion of national will, this perception that we have had an erosion of our national will and our combat credibility, our willingness to go to war to uphold our interests, is what is essentially causing this to accelerate. And that's what we have to focus on.
In particular, though, we're dealing with a very clearly declining number of ships that can be at sea at any one time. Is that a problem, Jerry? You know, sometimes quantity is quality.
Absolutely. And so while we do have a significant number of ships at sea right now, and I would also mention that the USS Carl Vinson, another Nimitz-class aircraft carrier and her strike group, just pulled in Singapore. That means that we have three carrier strike groups at sea right now. Well, that's 3 out of 11. That means that we are drawing from our readiness bank account right now. So we are withdrawing the readiness out of the fleet. That is something we'll have to build back up later because we simply don't have enough ships, whether it's Burke-class destroyers or the Ticonderoga-class cruisers or our carriers or our frigates, which we have no frigates in the fleet right now. And so we do not have enough ships to cover down on all of our interests. So, yes, the Red Sea is now effectively closed to commercial traffic. Many of the international insurance companies like Lloyd's of London have raised their rates so high that many of these large shipping companies like Maersk have decided to reroute their large container ships or their oilers or something to go around the Cape of Good Hope. And so the Red Sea is closed. That has a huge impact on that region. Egypt has just lost out on 100 licenses of ships to go through the Suez Canal, which is an income stream for them. But the broader implication is that the seas can be closed, that the concept of the free sea, something that I've written about in the past, has been compromised. And if it can be compromised in the Red Sea, John, it can be compromised elsewhere, like in the South China Sea or in the Arctic, where two other major bad actors, China and Russia, are already moving.
The drones and the cruise missiles that were said to be launched by al-Houthis, the Navy has prepared for that over the years, Jerry. It wasn't surprised. And my memory of the reporting of the USS Kearney was that it was congratulations. You knocked down an attack on commercial shipping. Maybe one got through. I don't recall exactly the incidents. But it now looks like the Houthis, named for a young man, he's 44 years old, his name is al-Houthi, he's a cult leader and a gangster. It now looks that they don't actually have to hit something. They've learned that the insurance rates themselves do the job. Is the Navy prepared for that? That what we're dealing with here is an extremely reluctant commercial world, and the consequence will be prices go up, oil is restricted, and at this point, you'd have to say the seas are no longer free, not only in the Red Sea, but the Straits of Malacca or other choke points around the world.
John, the thing that has changed here, the Navy is prepared to do its job, and its job is to defend the free sea and to defend the partners and allies, the commercial fleets that are around it, because they are the lifeblood of a $100 trillion global domestic product, which we have 25% of here in our own country. The Navy's prepared to do that job. What has changed, though, John, is that the Navy has an old saying, for that matter, I think it goes throughout all the militaries, which is shoot the archer, not the arrow. And so, you know, the Houthis are launching all these missiles, which is to say, John, that Iran is launching all these missiles. Let's be clear about who the perpetrator here is. Whether it's Hamas or Hezbollah or the Houthis, Iran is the perpetrator here and the bad actor in the region. Normally, what we would be looking for, we, the military, is let me get the archer. Let me stop shooting down the arrows. Let me get the archer. And right now, because there's concerns about what would happen with the current administration's Middle East policy, which has been to try to reopen Iran and bring it into the family of nations, that if we actually went after Iranian targets or their proxies in Yemen or, quite frankly, the Quds Force or the Iranian Revolutionary Guard in the Arabian Gulf, that in fact that would destabilize the region and destroy the current administration's Middle East policy. That's what we ought to be doing right now. That's what we would traditionally do in the past. We're not being allowed to do that now because of fear of escalation across the region.
One note. Industrial base, it's an uncomfortable topic because everybody's talking about it in terms of the army, the number of shells produced, the weapons that are needed for Ukraine. But that's 10 times worse for the Navy. Is that correct, Captain?
That is correct, because although Undersecretary of Defense LaPlante has talked about that we're going from 14,000 155 millimeter artillery shells to 100,000 right now in the production. No one's talking about taking a similar ramp up or have announced that we are going to achieve a similar ramp up in the production of Standard Missile 2, Standard Missile 3s, or Standard Missile 6s, the type of missiles that we traditionally put on board our Navy vessels to shoot down things. And so although the Navy has not come out and said what we are using to shoot down these drones and cruise missiles, I suspect that what we're using is some fairly expensive and complex weapon systems to be able to take down what is a fairly basic drone. Now, John, that's okay. That's why we built these things. And we have a much larger economy to be able to replace those. But it will take us time. And it is very much an asymmetric competition where we're spending, you know, a couple million dollars per missile to shoot down something that's probably cost only $10,000 to $100,000 to build. So that is that's an upside down economic equation. But we also have a much larger economy to draw from than the Iranians do.
I want to understand how the money gets divided in Congress. My memory is that the attempt is to be equal between the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force. which is okay in theory. But it strikes me that the Navy is the front line, the back line, the prosperity. And that would, my sense of the world right now is that that would favor the Navy. Does Congress see it that way?
Well, we've seen voices talk about shifting the balance. We've complained for years about the one-third, one-third, one-third division. And that's something that actually sort of become institutionalized with the passage of the Goldwater-Nichols Act in 1986. And we've begun to recognize that the world isn't sort of divided in one-third, one-third, one-third. Not to mention the Air Force, its budget also covers the Space Force, as well as a number of intelligence community issues. The Navy, actually, its budget also covers the Marine Corps. And then the Army is the Army. So I think the point here is we're starting to see a discussion amongst the congressional delegations about, hey, the challenge is at sea right now. It is a maritime world. The global commons are where this competition is playing out. And we're probably going to need to see some significant shifts in budget authorities towards the maritime environment as well as the other global commons.
Jerry, the East Asia story. Very, very, very alarming to everyone, especially with regard to Taiwan. But we're talking about the Red Sea. We're not even going to East Asia. We're looking at a landscape that describes commerce in and out of the Mediterranean basin. That's like a home field. The Navy does not, to my knowledge, at this point, have adequate ships to police and patrol and keep free the Red Sea, the Persian Gulf, the Mediterranean basin with the fords offshore from Israel and Lebanon right now, and also keep China inside the first island chain. Is that correct? That there are not enough ships for that at sea.
Yeah, that's correct. So, I mean, the Ford has been extended on her deployment and then extended again. You know, when you're on board the ship and they start serving the surf and turf, steak and lobster dinner night for all the crew on board, that's when you know that the bad news is about to come. And the crew of the USS Ford has had two surf and turf nights on board the ship as they've been extended for an additional 30 days at sea. The Ford was supposed to be home over a month and a half ago. And then with the attack on Israel on October the 7th, the Ford got extended. And so that crew is pulling some pretty heavy duty, and that's a brand new aircraft carrier on her first patrol right now, her first deployment. So we're going to have to get that ship home and take a look at her from a maintenance standpoint. Eisenhower came out of Norfolk early and shot across the ocean and settled around into the Gulf of Aden, Gulf of Oman operations. So we're covering down on both sides. And like I said, Carl Vinson right now is off from Singapore. So again, you know, three of the 10 available aircraft carriers are out at sea. We also look at these other things. Now, John, the regional combatant commanders, that's Indo-PACOM, UCOM, U.S. Southern Command, U.S. Northern, they have identified these 18 maritime regions of the world where the U.S. has to maintain presence in order to uphold our interests. We simply no longer have enough ships. Normally, it takes between 130 and 150 ships to cover down on all of those regions sufficiently in any given year. We're only deploying about 50 to 80 ships. And I think I checked earlier this morning, and it's about 51 ships that are at sea today. So we don't have enough ships to cover down on all of our interests, which means we're seeing degradation at the edges, John. And that's what's happened to the Red Sea. That degradation has gotten to the point that the seam unraveled. And right now, no one's operating in the Red Sea.
Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy captain, retired aviator, senior fellow at the Sagamore Institute. You ask yourself, what is to be done? When we come back, Jerry's written What is to be Done, his book, To Provide and Maintain a Navy, Why Naval Primacy is America's First Best Strategy. When we come back, I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.